Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Was a fledgling academic. I think I have the longest uncompleted PhD thesis in Harvard history haunting me. And there are a lot of things I would like to do. Some people are able to write and also pursue an active life. I am easily distracted by, I started writing the statement, the blank page, but I want to be au courant, the blank screen. I will take almost any excuse not to write. And I do want to write, and I want to write
about
this.
Knock it off already. Take a walk. Okay, so we know Barney Frank announced he won't run for re-election. He claims it's because of redistricting. But all of us who really have studied the situation know that it's not about that at all. It's about the fact that he is retiring because he's running away from the scandal of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. He is running away from the fact that he paid big bonuses to his friends of the bailout-sucking Fannie Mae. You got to remember that Barney Frank was literally sleeping with a top Fannie Mae executive while he sat on the House Banking Committee. Sexuality aside, sorry, that's a foul ball. The fact of the matter is this man shouldn't have held his position for many, many years from now. He is the paragon of death spiral Democrat politics, piling taxpayer money upon taxpayer money to his cronies. And frankly, I think he was running because he was about to be either investigated or indicted. That's what I think. I think it has nothing to do with anything else. But the question is this. Now that we know Barney Frank is leaving one way or the other, what do you think he will actually do in his retirement? I mean, I thought about it. Men like this just don't disappear. They go on to other things. He hinted he might go into writing, but you know he can't do that. Could he be possibly thinking about a career as a clown at children's parties? How about becoming assistant basketball coach at Syracuse University? He could, of course, apply for the position to be the head of the athletic department at Penn State. Or perhaps he could become a historical consultant to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac along the lines of Newt Gingrich, who led the way on that one. And speaking of Barney and Newt, to me they're sort of maybe like bookends. When you say Newt Gingrich, you say Barney Frank, for some reason, I see a lot of similarities. Now, I know that you don't believe that's true, but there's nothing more I have to say about this than to play the soundbite of the kiss of death of Bill Clinton praising Newt Gingrich in clip 9. Listen to this now.
Hello? He thinks about this stuff all the time. He's articulate, and he tries to think of a conservative version of an idea that will solve a legitimate problem.
So that's Bill Clinton praising Newt Gingrich, which is the kiss of death for Newt Gingrich. That's the end of the road. But why do you think Newt Gingrich is doing this to the Republican Party? Because it's not about winning. He can't win. He's the least electable of the entire pack. The reason I say that is not that Gingrich doesn't have good ideas. A lot of people have good ideas. I have good ideas. I'm not running for the presidency. This is about a man who is an insider, a lifetime insider, a man who's fed on the pork of Washington his entire life, lived off the pork of Washington his entire life, and now he's attacking Romney. He is attacking Mitt Romney. Now, Mitt Romney, of course, is a liberal Republican. Let's be clear. That doesn't make him evil. He's a liberal Republican. And I'll tell you right now, many of you hate Mitt Romney, but I'll tell you this. I would sleep better at night if Mitt Romney were president than Barack Obama. I'll tell you that right now. I know that Mitt Romney's a liberal on many, many social issues, and certainly that's not where I would go if I had my choice. But I know on national security and as far as American values, Mitt Romney is to be, in my mind, certainly more acceptable to me than Barack Obama and Newt Gingrich. American family values, ditching his wife while she was sick. But I don't want to spend this show talking about Newt Gingrich. I think he's a kind of a flash in the pan, and I think that this is all part of the government media complex in order to destroy the Republican ticket altogether. That's all there is to it. And that leads us right back to Obama, because all roads lead to Obama. The fact of the matter is, we know that Obama was not really ready for the presidency. We understand that. He needs a teleprompter. We know that. We know that his reign has been nothing but one crisis after another. One crisis after another. Remember the Black Panther civil rights stonewalling where he wouldn't pursue that case? How about the Solyndra special interest money? How about all of the other scandals in this scam called global warming or warmism, the religion of the radical left? How about the fast and furious gun running to Mexico, which led to the death of a Border Patrol agent with a real name? How about stonewalling on the Kagan Solicitor General conflict of interest? How about a stonewalling as commander-in-chief where he leads from behind, hoping that the rest of the world or the hoping that the rest of the herd will be consumed before reaching him? How about Obama's foreign policy, where he has ceded U.S. global primacy to all of the regional powers, one after the other, where he has weakened the U.S. politically, diplomatically, economically, and militarily, almost to a point of none leverage? It's not that we're destroyed, but we have almost no leverage over our real enemies. We're certainly not trusted by the nations of the world. And what is Obama's solution for the economy? He has no ideas for creating jobs. Obama's solution is to tax you and I, the taxpayers, into indenturement and transition this country into the same unionized government dependent upon socialism that is consuming much of Europe. And what does Obama do when he reaches a roadblock with the Congress? Instead of trying to diplomatically compromise, he simply orders his staff of Marxists to bypass the Congress and the Constitution. This is a petty emperor. This is a petty emperor who is attempting to force his will, his arrogance, upon the rest of us to change the reality and make an impression on history at the cost of bringing down a nation. And he has only two more years to do it. The fact of the matter is, the bubble that he has been working in has reached a $15 trillion capacity, and he knows it cannot expand any further. And the fact of the matter is, the game is over. If you care to comment on any of these topics, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. What are the topics here on the Savage Nation? There is Bonnie Frank announcing he won't run for re-election. Am I asking you the question, why do you think he's really retiring? Do you really think a man like this retires? I don't. So what is he really retiring from? Then we have the issue of Gingrich, who is attacking Romney, further eroding the Republican chances next November. Do you actually think that Gingrich is the most electable of the ticket? I personally will say what I said to you before, and I'm going to ask you to understand what I'm about to say. Newt Gingrich is probably a brilliant man with some excellent ideas, which he can, you know, deal with any way he wants. He's a smart man. He has legislative experience, which is a plus. He, after all, was Speaker of the House. Don't diminish that. But he's unelectable. And the reason I say that is that I'm a student of political history and also a student of human beings. I want you to envision a fat, old, gray-haired white man against a young, svelte black man on the stage. And now I want to ask you who the people are going to elect. It's as simple as that. I want you to understand this is about telegenicity. Telegenicity, I know it's a big word you haven't heard on MSNBC. It is about telegenicity. And Obama is very telegenic. The other man is like a retreaded white wall tire from the 60s. Remember those fat white wall tires that were on old Buicks? Every time I see Newt Gingrich, I think of an old white wall tire that's been retreaded and repainted white. Sorry, it doesn't work. It doesn't run on my car. It would not keep the Savage Caddy afloat on Highway 101. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. We have another big, 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 big treat for you here on the Savage Nation. In fact, I'm going to maybe play it for you now, blow it all out at once. Let's fire on every cylinder. We have some sound that you're not going to believe. As you well know, the occupiers were the lowest common denominator in our society and in the society of Canada. Those in the Occupy movement, the ones who actually went in the gutters and slept there, were the extras on life's stage. They had no role in the play of life. And here we have the sound of one of these weaklings crying because the city officials in Toronto took down his so-called library that he had established with the other gutter rats. Listen to this sniveling, useless idiot.
I've spent the last 3 weeks building this library into a place where people can come together, where they can share ideas, where they can meet each other, and where they can just be in peace together. And now it's all being torn apart for no good reason. We're not hurting anybody here. We're not hurting anyone. We just want to be here and meet each other and learn together. We just want to try and build a new world.
Build a new world. Stalin built a new world. Hitler built a new world. And, of course, Lenin told us that useful idiots would help him build a new world, which they did. They built the Bolshevik world, which led to the deaths of over 100 million people. But the sniveling weakling, of course, will no doubt be invited on Good Morning, Goodbye America, rather. And they'll hold him up as some role model of some innocent young man. A sniveling weakling of no value whatsoever to any society in history, while our young warriors, with privations, are starving for the company of real men in government in Afghanistan, fighting on the front lines of civilization. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I've spent the last 3 weeks building this library into a place where people can come together, where they can share ideas, where they can meet each other, and where they can just be in peace together. And now it's all being torn apart.
Please, the weaklings of America, you know, that's what we're listening to. That's where the media lionizes. Here's a guy that, Bonnie Frank, for example, saying he won't run for re-election. We all know why. I mean, he's ducking from some kind of investigation. We know that he was involved with the Freddie and Fannie, and he gave away billions of dollars to his friends, huge, huge bonuses. And he doesn't suddenly retire for no reason. Either somebody got to him and said, either you get out or you're going to be indicted. Something happened we'll never know about. Maybe I watch too much television. I don't really know. But I do know this. I know that this is the Savage Nation. I know that it's nighttime on the East Coast because I'm on the East Coast. I know that my mascot, Teddy the Poodle, is not with me. And I know that if Teddy is listening to me on the West Coast, I'm going to say, Teddy, I miss you. And I know that my loyal listeners are listening here on the Savage Nation, both on the East Coast and, of course, across America. The phone number here being 1-800-449-8255. There are many topics to talk about today. And I've introduced many of them. If you care to call us, and you'll probably reach, if you get on the air, if you pass my call screener, you will probably speak to more people than you'll meet for the rest of your life. Think about that one. Think about that one. If you get on this radio show, I mean, I make it sound so conversational that you think you're calling up a friend or a relative and talking to one person. But no, that's not true. If you have the privilege of getting on this show, and my call screener, Doug, accepts you, you will reach more people than you have met or will meet for the rest of your life. So try to make your words count. New York City, WOR. Welcome, Mike. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I'd like to say it's an honor to speak with you. And I want to let you know that I agree with you on most points, but I've been a union member for the last 15 years. And I want you to know that they've protected my personal safety and the safety of a lot of workers at my company over the last 15 years on numerous occasions. And I wanted to just...
Well, of course, feedback. For the individual protected by a union, the unions are important. But at what cost to the society as a whole?
Well, I also agree that I fought my union on their support of the Occupy Wall Street movement because I am absolutely...
Yeah, why would the unions be on the side of the street rabble? Did you ever think about that? Why would the unions take the side of those who are trying to knock down the pillars of our society? Did you ever ask yourself that question?
I have, and I even brought it to my union delegates, and they, of course, have no answer to me because even the unions have ivory towers that we can't reach. But I also, you know, do feel that these meatballs, I think there's a small point to, or a large point to be made, but there's a small section of them that have a valid point to be made, I should say, and that is that there is a disconnect. And I think globalization and NAFTA has...
All right, but we all know that this is old 90s rhetoric. Of course we're all opposed to those things. But it doesn't take interrupting the normal goings about of working people or blocking the Brooklyn Bridge in order to make that point, does it?
Oh, absolutely. I've been so inconvenienced.
Moreover, what right does that individual have to inhibit the next man from freedom of movement? He's violating the other man's constitutional rights to freedom of movement. Where did he get the right to do that?
Can I ask you, Dr. Savage, do you agree, though, that there is some type of disconnect between the corporate America and the corporate America of old? That absolutely...
It depends upon how you define corporate America. Today, the words corporate America have been made into bad, dirty words when the opposite is the truth. Corporate America is the engine of our society to a great extent. Every time I go into a large supermarket, I see corporate America at its best. I see endless choices in foods, all brought to me by corporate America. So I don't want to jump on the bandwagon. What do you want me to do, go back to the buggy whip, the individual farmer? I could buy organic produce if I want it. I know where to go get it. I can get the organic sheep's milk and the organic lettuce, and I do enjoy it. What do you mean by corporate America? You want to focus on which corporations we're talking about? Let's do that. The next time one of these loudmouth frontmen for General Electric on MSNBC opens his big mouth about corporate America who pays a salary, why don't you just ask him how come General Electric paid no income taxes on over $5 billion in U.S. income?
Here, absolutely. And why?
I mean, I could scream every time I hear one of these shills on more Soviet nonsense by chicks, more Soviet nonsense by communists. Every time one of those shills opens their mouth, I want to yell and say, what about your parent company not paying income tax? How do they get away with it?
I have no idea, but I wonder also, how is it that these companies can be headquartered in other countries and do 85% of their business here and then avoid the...
Well, I understand how it works. They hire former IRS tax lawyers to run interference for them. GE, I understand, has over 1,000 tax lawyers making certain that tax codes are written so they pay no taxes. Of course I'd like to see corporations pay their fair share of taxes. I'm taxed to death myself, but I pay them. I pay my taxes. Every cent I pay retail because I have to. How do they get away with it? But I'm not laying down in the gutter because they're doing it. I'm not building a library in the streets.
Savage.
I do not believe that the people of the United States are going to take people who've been here a quarter century, who have children and grandchildren, who are members of the community, who may have done something 25 years ago, separate them from their families, and expel them. And I'm prepared to take the heat for saying, let's be humane in enforcing the law without giving them citizenship, but by finding a way to create legality so that they are not separated from their family.
Governor. See, now that's in essence a principled statement, but it has no practical, you know, measure. It has no meaning. That's never going to happen, what he just said. He's trying to appease to the Latino lobbies. That's all he did there. And of course the liberal media wanted him to soar in order to make the other Republicans look like mean men. That's what the whole purpose of the Gingrich candidacy is, which is to run the other Republicans off the road and move them to the left. Why else would they subject themselves to debates in front of weasels like whatever the guy's name is on CNN, Wolfie Blitzer? Well, who would subject themselves to that other than a party that's committing suicide? But let's put that aside. Here you have the retreaded white wall tire Gingrich saying that he's more electable than anybody else when it's the opposite. He's the least electable of all the candidates because he's the least attractive physically. And I told you that you must never underestimate the intelligence of the average American because, as H.L. Mencken wrote many, many decades ago, no one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the average American. And so they don't really vote based upon any principles. Now, you listening to the show, by and large, are idea people. And you're interested in political ideas. The average person is interested in looks and how people sound. Again, I have to tell you, his telegenicity factor is very low, while Obama's telegenicity factor is very high. Big word, telegenicity. That's about six syllables right there. Now, that's a six-syllable word. That's a lot of syllables there. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What would you like to talk about? Gingrich is a big story. Bonnie Frank is a big story. I have not yet gotten into the Thanksgiving postmortem yet. I mean, we could do some of that because I actually wrote a poem on Thanksgiving. There's a certain Welshmatz takes me over on a Thanksgiving afternoon when it's dark, and I see fathers in the suburbs limply throwing a football with their young sons, and something in me dies. It's not because my father was working 7 days a week to support us and didn't throw a football with us on Thanksgiving, even though he didn't. There's something else that hurts me when I see the fathers throwing that ball almost robotically on a Thursday. And I wrote a little one-line poem. It's at this point, it's part of a haiku. And it went like this as I walked out of my house after the turkey, and I saw one father after another pathetically and limply throwing a football with another young son. And I said this, I said, "Looking for courier, I can't find the Ives. All I see is nothing but jive." Of course, then I went into a long poem, which I'm not going to bore you with. Now, you have to know who Courier and Ives were in order to get the drift of that poem. And again, I don't underestimate the intelligence of my audience because I don't think Courier and Ives are even known who they are. But I'm the kind of guy who always wanted to see with rose-colored glasses. I wanted to see snow in the mountains on Thanksgiving. So inevitably, when the kids were young, we'd jump in the car and drive up to Tahoe, and there would be no snow. And I'd come back brokenhearted that there was no picture-perfect snow on the ground on Lake Tahoe. You understand what I'm saying about the football metaphor or not? It's going into my book. By the way, let me backtrack just so I include you in my life. My novel, if you don't like it, turn the show off. My best-selling novel, Abuse of Power, has a character named Jack Hatfield, which America is in love with because Jack's a great hero. Okay, he saves us from the hand of Allah, etc. So the publisher's so thrilled with him, I'm writing a sequel. In the next book, I have created a counter character to Jack. He is everything to Jack. Jack is everything good in this character. Abe Cohen is everything bad. Abe is an aging hippie. Abe has a bald head with a ponytail. Abe owns a poster store. Abe is everything negative about the world. And everything negative, I think, comes out of Abe's mouth. So stay tuned for the next incarnation of the next volume of the Jack Hatfield adventure. And that's why now I have a place to go with all my negative thoughts. So, in other words, I took my Courier and Ives thought, and I now it goes into Abe's mouth. Isn't that great to be able to write it into a character? It's really good when you think about it. That way I don't have to see a psychiatrist. See, if I was an ordinary person, I'd go to the doctor on Monday and say, "I don't feel good. I'm depressed. I got the post-Thanksgiving blues." And he'd say, "What's bothering you?" I said, "I was outside. I got very depressed seeing fathers throwing their footballs in the dusk with their sons. And there was nothing really there. And it was pathetic. And it was limp. And it hurt me. I looked for Courier. I couldn't find Ives. All I saw was nothing but jive." And he'd say, "Take two Prozacs and call me in 2 weeks." So I don't even need that. I write it into Abe Cohen's mouth. You get this? You get the drift? How good it is to be a writer? Come on, lighten up out there. Wake up, wake up, wake up. It's Monday after Thanksgiving. What do you got to look forward to now? Well, you know, Black Friday was a big day. It was actually a bigger day than originally reported. I mean, someone reported it was down. It was really way up, which is very good news. It shows you what printing money can bring to a society. Sacramento, KSTE. Eric, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. Are you there? Gone. He put it on a stand? Eric, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I believe that Newt Gingrich would be a great candidate to face Barack Obama in the election.
Well, he would be a good candidate, but he'll lose.
He'd crush him in a debate. I think people have had...
You don't understand something. Of course he's smarter than Obama, but he's not electable.
I disagree.
Well, on what basis do you disagree? On your own intuition?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, that's right. My own.
Okay, let me ask you something. You're an inner city ethnic minority. Would you vote for Newt?
Maybe.
Oh, come on. You're stretching it. You're a young Latino citizen. Would you vote for Newt or Obama?
If people can't eat right now, they're going to vote for who has the answers, and I don't think Barack Obama has the answers.
Well, no one's starving in America, so let's stop what they can't eat right now. No one in America is starving. There's an obesity epidemic, the last I checked. So this whole idea that we're starving is nonsense. Newt Gingrich is telegenically negative. He projects an old, fat, white man. You know that, and I know that.
If I heard both of them on the stage side by side.
But they're not, the world is not you. Maybe you're an averagely intelligent man or even more than averagely intelligent, and you actually are listening to the debate and the ideas. Do you have any idea what percentage of the voting public actually listens to a debate? How minuscule it really is?
No.
It's small. They vote based upon sound bites and looks and TV ads. I don't think you understand that.
Okay, well, I have a question then. Why is Romney more electable?
Because he's better looking. How's that? He looks like a president. You ask people who don't even like Romney what they say about him, and I've talked to many people who think he's too liberal. They all say to me he looks presidential, and he does. I've had dinner with him. He would deny it today, but if it keeps up, I'll put his picture up of me eating with him in North Beach 2 years ago, December. We had a dinner tete-a-tete. He's a very intelligent man, a very nice man, and I said, great family story. He's a little too liberal for me in most areas on social issues. But I'd vote for him in a second over Obama. How's that?
I just don't believe him. Something about him, my insides, I just don't believe him. I don't know.
Let me ask you this. On a national security level, don't you believe Romney has the interests of America's national security at heart more so than Obama? Let's take it from the top down. National security.
Yes.
That's all I care about. At the end of the day, I care more about an incoming missile than I do about another ham on my table. And that's why I'm saying to you, we got to be realistic about it. We're never going to get 100% of what we want in anything in life, particularly in politics. Gingrich may be smart, but he's unelectable. He's running for the grandstanding to sell another book. What more do you need to know than Bill Clinton gave him the blessing? What does that tell you? Did you hear the soundbite of Bill Clinton blessing Gingrich? Hello?
No, I didn't.
Eric, did you hear me play the soundbite of Bill Clinton blessing Newt Gingrich?
No, I did not.
All right, hold on. I'm not going to play it. I have it. I'll play it later. Why do you think Bill Clinton wants Gingrich to be the candidate from the Republican side? Why?
Well, I'd have to assume that Newt knows everybody. He's been there so long. I think he can bring people together more than Romney can.
But that's not why Bill Clinton would like to see him as the candidate. It's because he knows he can be easily beaten by Obama. Bill Clinton's smart enough to know who's electable. And he knows Newt is a retread. He can't be elected.
I hope you're wrong.
Newt Gingrich, by the way, Newt Gingrich has baggage on his baggage. You know that as well, Eric, don't you?
Yes, I do.
All right, so those things would come up to haunt him. I mean, we're hearing nothing but Cain and 999 and the women and all of that. Now a woman comes up and says she had an affair with him. Again, they're dredging up some unknown person, another, you know, Stalinist fake accuser. What do you think would happen if Gingrich surged ahead in real time rather than fake CNN time?
Well, you have taught me that when they all start agreeing is when we should watch out.
Ah, so. Now, that's interesting. I said that years ago as well. When both parties agree on something, it means the American people are being screwed. I did say that years ago, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
I forgot that. My own wisdom came back just now from you, a listener. So I'm sending you a special New Year's, Christmas, Thanksgiving gift, abusive power, stay in the line. Portland, Oregon. Love the city. Haven't been there in 30 years, but I love it. Jay, welcome to the Savage Nation. If only I could see in the dark and see line 7. Jay, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Go with the Occupy movement, Doctor. It sucked big time. But
please speak up. I didn't hear a word you just said.
I said you would have loved Portland 2 weeks ago with the Occupy movement, Doctor. It sucked big time, but it's still a pretty place.
Have they been shipped down the river with the logs for logging season?
I think the lumberjacks that are still around would have rejected them all if that were the case, Doc.
Well, you know, as I said years ago, when you say Oregon, the R is gone. There's no question the R is gone. So what's on your mind today?
You know, I'm looking at the Newt thing, and I said to your screener, I've caught a lot of your comments on how you would have advised Cain a month ago with the whole women scandal, et cetera, and lay low and just let it blow and so forth. And I'm thinking, I'm not a big Newt guy, but if Newt's got any brains at all, he should listen to you while he's got a chance.
Listen to me? I'm saying he shouldn't run because he's destroying the Republican ticket.
I agree with you. And
oh, but that's what he wants to do. See, you assume that he has the interest of the Republican Party at heart. I don't. I assume that Newt is an insider, and I assume Newt sat down with some very expensive cognac with the people who run this country, and they said to him, look, we got rid of Cain. We defeated him with bullcrap. We got Romney to knock out of the box. Why don't you come up in the polls? We'll have a fake poll with that weasel Wolf Blitzer, and we'll let Wolf Blitzer make you look good. And then after that, start attacking Romney for us. And if you do that, we'll throw you some big contracts.
Why do you think they want Obama back so bad? I can't understand that from the Republican Party. It makes no sense.
What you don't understand is that there's no difference at the trough. There's no difference at the trough. The power structure is the power structure is the power structure. They're all feeding at the public trough. Don't you understand that?
I get it out here. And I think the best comment you made, number one, was what that guy reminded you about. I heard you back several years ago when you said when they start agreeing, we're in trouble. And I agree with that 100%. And
look, let's go back to Bush. Bush's cronies in the contracting business were making trillions of dollars off the Iraq war. As tragic as it is for me to say that, this could be corroborated by one indictment after another of corrupt contractors. So I'm not just making it up to sound intelligent or to sound cool. That's number one. They were robbing the American public on body armor that was not made right. Do I have to go down Humvees that were getting blown up and guys losing their legs by bastards who should be thrown in jail for their life, who manufactured Humvees without enough armor? Don't get me started with what these people are. So this went on under Bush. Then you had Bush, who increased the size of the federal government to an extent unseen in the previous three administrations. You know that as well, right?
I absolutely agree with you.
And who was it in the media, the only independent conservative, who said in the last 6 months of Bush's regime that he is a fiscal socialist? Who called him that? Me. And that was aimed at Bush. It was not aimed at Obama. No one ever heard of Obama. And I'll remind you of something else, and you only other listeners who like to denigrate me. Okay, you ready for this? In the September of the last year of Bush's regime, I said he hasn't even begun to do what he's going to do. Did I say that? And look at what he did in the last 3 months of his administration. He almost bankrupted this country with TARP. You think it was under Obama? All of these bailouts? It was under Bush. 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 So now, why do they want Obama to win again? Because he's a good whipping boy for them. They can continue to act like the holy saviors of America, flying the white flag of peace and freedom, and everything will be good again if only you elect us, if only those nasty Democrats are out of the way. They love having Obama in the White House, because that way he keeps the pressure off them.
I'm sorry,
I'm very cynical, and I apologize for it. But unfortunately, my cynicism is often rewarded with the reality of the fact that I'm right.
Well, you've called a lot of stuff. I've listened to
no,
you.
No, I'm overly cynical. I agree I am. And I agree that that you probably want to tune into a radio show where I become like a Republican booster along the lines of some of the others in the media, like if only you vote for Republican, everything will be great. Don't get me wrong. Obama's a Marxist. I defined it in trickle-up poverty. And the sooner he's out of office, the better for me. But I don't think the Republicans really want to win if they're going to just keep running such a limp-wristed campaign.
I guess, Doc,
if Romney came out and ripped into Obama every day where he's vulnerable, one day after the other, if he said, why don't you take pride in being an American? Why do you continue to denigrate America? Why do you act as though America is a second-rate country? Why do you go overseas and continue to put this country down? If he did it every day, he'd clearly win, but he's not doing it. Why is Romney not doing it?
I think he's probably got his people backing him up and saying, just go light on him because you're going to alienate people. You're better off winning with the soft.
So he's got the kinds of advisors who will destroy his campaign. That's what. You know, I've told people over and over and over again that campaign advisors are snakes. They work for one party, then they work for the other party. They're interchangeable. They're liars and they're thieves. Let me tell you a quick story, then I'll take a quick break. No, it would be too personal. But most campaign advisors run fake polls for candidates who have the money and advise them they have a chance of winning in order to get more money out of them. And they suck them dry and then they leave them high and dry. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Thinks about this stuff all the time. He's articulate, and he tries to think of a conservative version of an idea that will solve a legitimate problem.
Now, that's Bill Clinton giving the kiss of death to Newt Gingrich. But listen to what Clinton actually said. He tries to come up with a conservative idea or a conservative way of looking at an idea to solve a problem. Notice he didn't say Gingrich actually believes in the conservative idea. Did you catch that? In other words, we know that Obama is a sophist. I defined that phrase for you many times on this show. Sophism is an important concept for you to try to grasp. Bill Clinton was a fabulous sophist as well. And so here's a sophist's sophist, Bill Clinton, praising Newt Gingrich, not for his ideas, but for his ability to form ideas without really feeling anything about them one way or the other. Sophistry. That's the last thing we need right now. We need a person who loves America in every corpuscle of their bloodstream. We need someone who doesn't apologize for being an American. We need somebody who says, gives the middle finger to all the despots of the world. We need someone who unleashes our military, our special forces, our all of the greatest, toughest men on earth upon the despots of the planet. That's what we need right now. We don't need another fat insider, another old white wall tire rolling along around the beltway, okay? In plain English. You want another fat white wall tire rolling around the beltway, then vote for Gingrich. Are you people crazy? Are you people out of your mind to think this man is electable? What's wrong with you? Okay, whatever. Whatever, let's move on. I have nothing at stake here. As the American people like to say, I have no dog to hunt or whatever. I don't know about these phrases, how they work. There's such American phrases that I don't even remember them. I have no dog in this chase or something like that. That is so incredibly rednecky. I don't even know the phrase because I try to create original ideas and original phrases. Sandusky Charity tells donors give elsewhere. L.A. protesters defy eviction efforts, go to court. Ringling Brothers agrees to $270,000 fine by the USDA saying that they abused animals. Judge blocks anti-abortion license plates in North Carolina. Ohio's 200-pound 8-year-old prompts parent issue. FBI director raises concerns with detainee policy. U.S. vulnerable to cyber attacks, says the military chief.
Barney says there's no truth in the fact that I'm going to take the job as assistant basketball coach at Syracuse University. Absolutely nothing to do with Penn State.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Of course, the big story is that Barney Frank says he's retiring owing to redistricting, but we all know that's not the reason. We also know that he's not going to be indicted for any crimes he may or may not have committed as the head of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, including granting gargantuanly pornographic-level bonuses to his cronies at bailout-sucking Fannie Mae. He will never be indicted for any of this. In fact, I think it's a deal that if he got out of the business of being in Congress, they would leave him alone. Now, what is he going to do after this is anyone's guess. I have no idea. Guys like this never really retire. And a guy as powerful as Barney Frank with as little talent as Barney Frank has. I mean, after all, he didn't get elected for 16 terms because he's a genius. He didn't get elected for 16 terms and oversee billions and billions of dollars of taxpayer money because he's such a financial genius. He did it because, he was useful to those who were in power, that's all. And he is certainly a poster boy for term limits. There's no question about that. No question as well that the Democrat hopes of retaking the House in 2012 have grown dimmer the longer people see Obama. The more Obama is in power, the more Democrats are bailing out. So, okay, he's finished. But what about all the money that's gone? The big bonuses paid to executives of the bailout-sucking Fannie Mae? The fact that Frank was literally sleeping with a top Fannie Mae executive while he sat on the House Banking Committee? You say, well, what? That's his business. No, it isn't his business. We're not talking about his sexual orientation. We're talking about the illegitimacy of what he did and the illegality of what he did. That's what we're talking about. But just because of his sexual orientation doesn't mean you give him a pass, does it? Again, what, a double standard? So there's a lot to talk about here. This man is leaving at the right time. And the question is, where did all the money go? Then you have, to me, when you say Bonnie Franken, you say Newt Gingrich, to me, they're bookends. They're bookends. They're both insiders. They're both inside the Beltway guys. They've both been around since, I guess, forever. And to see them hammering Kane now with yet a new woman's coming forward saying she had a 13-year relationship with the GOP candidate. Why is he wearing a black hat? Didn't anyone tell Herman Cain that villains wear black hats? Who's advising Herman Cain to wear the black cowboy hat? I mean, I love Herman Cain. I do love the man. Personally, I would be his friend in a minute. Personally, Herman and I would get along great wherever we were. Herman's the kind of guy that I could just spend a lot of time with him, have a good time with him. Electable, maybe. I like the guy. But the black hat, they're destroying him piece by piece. They're taking the man apart. And so that leaves us with who? It leaves us with Romney, 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 and Romney again. Romney is electable, while the retreaded white wall tire, Newt Gingrich, is not electable. What more do you need to know than the fact that Bill Clinton, the most disgraced current former president, Bill Clinton, has basically endorsed Newt Gingrich? Does anyone not think that odd that Bill Clinton would praise Newt Gingrich? You know, it's like from one sophist to another. He says he's articulate. So what is he trying to do? Why is he saying these things? Okay, whatever. You know, it's another night. It's Monday night. It's after Thanksgiving. We all, thank God, live in a beautiful country with more freedom than we deserve, I guess, for the way we behave. When you think about it, look what people do with their freedom when you think about it. But that's for the individual to decide what to do with. We have religious freedom. We have freedom of speech. We have freedom of assembly. We have a wonderful nation. And the current crop of politicians had nothing to do with any of the freedoms that we currently have. Do you realize that? Do you know that all the freedoms we enjoy have nothing to do with any of the crooks that are currently in office? It doesn't mean that some of the crooks wouldn't support the freedoms if they can grift out some money for any of the freedoms. But these are not the level of the men who created our country. They're nowhere near them. They're like not even a shadow of the footprint of any of the men who created this nation. So we're all enjoying the after effects of the greatest men in the history of the world, the founding fathers of the United States of America. And I, for one, still believe in America. And I, for one, believe that if we got a candidate who stopped apologizing for America and stopped complaining about America and stopped putting Americans down and started to go on the attack and attack the low-life third world despots and unleashed our special forces and special ops teams on the bad guys on the planet and told those that don't like us they can take a jump off a short pier. If only we had a candidate like that, I think we'd have a great country all over again. There's so many things that need to be done. And I don't know that any of these men are going to be the kind of guy to stand up and do it truthfully. So we have to take what we can get. You know that Obama is a disaster for the United States of America. We know that he is not comfortable being an American. We know that he's not comfortable being the president. We know that he's constantly somehow putting down the country and putting down the presidency and putting down the people. It's a horrible thing to look at. He always has to use a teleprompter. He doesn't really speak from the heart. All of the corruption after corruption after corruption in the administration is being swept under the rug because of the media that's throwing sex scandals in your face. Did you notice what scandals you have forgotten about because of the media, the vermin rats in the media who keep throwing you these sex scandals? A pox upon all their houses. All they talk about are sex scandals instead of Solyndra, instead of Light Squared. You remember the Light Squared scandal I brought up about a month ago? You forgot that one already? About a guy who created some kind of technology that interferes with our GPS, of our military's GPS. and how he was a big donor to Obama. You forgot about the Light Squared scandal, the Solyndra scandal, the $1.2 billion to the Kennedy, the $900 million to Pelosi's brother-in-law. All of that's been forgotten. All you care about now is Sandusky and this other cretin at Syracuse. Why? Why? Because you're a stupid person. America is filled with idiots who can't get enough sex scandals. They just can't get enough of it. So the rats in the media throw you the cheap stuff, and you forget the big stuff. You forget this is the most scandal-ridden administration in American history. You have already forgotten about Solyndra, Light Squared. You've forgotten about the $1.2 billion in guaranteed loans to the Kennedys. You have forgotten about the gun running to Mexico, hundreds of machine guns sent to Mexico that led to the death of a U.S. Border Patrol agent. You have forgotten about the unqualified Kagan, who as Solicitor General had a conflict of interest and lied when it came to Obamacare, and she's now on the Supreme Court. You have forgotten all of these things. You have forgotten that this man has a foreign policy that has ceded U.S. global primacy to the regional powers of the earth. You have forgotten that Obama has weakened the U.S. politically, diplomatically, economically, and militarily to a point of none leverage, and worse, none trust by the nations of the world. Here is a man whose only solution for our economic woes is to tax we, the people, into indenturement and transition us to the same unionized, corrupt, government dependency socialism that is consuming most of Europe. And what does this president do when he reaches a roadblock with the Congress? Does he try to compromise like LBJ did? Does he try to negotiate like many Democrats have done in the past? He simply orders his Marxist academic staff to bypass the U.S. Congress and the United States Constitution. This is a petty emperor who is attempting to enforce his will, his arrogance, to alter reality and make an impression on history at the cost of bringing down America. Ladies and gentlemen, the bubble has now reached the point of bursting. It's $15 trillion, and even Obama the magician cannot expand it any further, and nobody knows it better than him. And that's why Rep. Bonnie Frank is retiring, because there's no more money left for the corrupt Democrat machine. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be right back. Well, welcome back to the Savage Nation. We're taking your calls on all of these topics. Bonnie Frank, Newt Gingrich, Kane, the fact that they're distracting you with sex scandals one after the other. If you care to comment on any of these topics, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I truly hope you heard my monologue at the end of the last segment on why I believe Obama was not ready for the presidency and how his continual apologies, etc., are a disgrace to the presidency and to the American people. And if you disagree with me, it's too bad. It means you don't know what's really going on. So let's take the callers on the Savage Nation. Some of them are excellent, and they're from all over the country, as you can well imagine, from New York to Hawaii. I haven't heard from my... So therefore, I'll keep talking. That's all. It's as simple as that. 1-800-449-8255. Let me tell you what's up on my board. Actually, what I'd like to do is get my novel. My friend Dr. Sarfati is here. I can read from my... No, Jack, can you go get me a copy of my book out on the desk here in this great studio out here? I have a caller, Joe from Hawaii, who says the United States has become a corporation. A man, Mark from Texas, says the Gingrich people won't answer questions. Thank you, doctor. Jerry in Las Vegas says the candidates must be cosmetically appealing, which I've been trying to tell you. Dennis in North Carolina is saying everyone is looking for a Ronald Reagan. Ben in Pennsylvania is saying any Republican will beat Obama. Joe in Vermont is saying the decline of politicians is apparent wherever we turn. Jim in Reno is saying Clinton is supporting Newt in order to make sure Hillary gets the nod. That's a very interesting one. I have a very special treat for you. It's from the New York Times best-selling author and nationally syndicated radio talk show host, Michael Savage, which comes to you a high-intensity debut thriller, the story of a smeared network journalist who uncovers a chilling terrorist plot. And it's from my book, Abuse of Power. Many of you have not gotten the book. So what I'm going to start to do is read you from the book. How's that? Would that appeal to you? So there's a blast. There's a car blast. And we don't know who set it off, you know, and was someone is killed. And I can't read you the dirty parts. No, there aren't any. There's just some good. I'll read from page 28. Because 1-800, the FBI wasted no time instituting a media blackout. They didn't call it that, of course. At an impromptu press conference near the blast site that night, with particles of dust still visible in the floodlights, newly appointed mayor Daniel Maywood announced that the city of San Francisco was cooperating fully with the FBI and Homeland Security. However, due to the sensitivity of the investigation, all inquiries were being routed to the FBI's press liaison, which Jack knew from experience was a deep black hole. Sound familiar to you listeners out there in the savage land? The public was assured that the federal government would spare no expense in finding out who was responsible for the blast, but until the investigation was complete, they would not engage in speculation. Mm-hmm. Questions about Al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations were floated, but an FBI spokeswoman repeatedly explained that unless someone came forward to claim responsibility, they may not know who was responsible for several days. Figuring out what really happened didn't take a Heritage Foundation think tank, Jack thought. The city's civic center was only blocks away, the fattest target on the route. But the feds had no intention of fueling rumors or causing concern that the center or any other public space was not safe. And we go on. We go on the book, the Savage Nation book, the main book of the time, Abuse of Power, which will make a great Christmas gift. Let's see. Now we bring in the other character. Jack had known Tony Antinori for a little over a year. But the moment he met the guy, they'd felt an immediate kinship, and that was the kind of compliment he didn't hand out often. A former Green Beret paratrooper, Tony had done 3 tours in Vietnam, had cross-trained as both a medic and a rifleman, and was still active in the National Guard, teaching combat medicine to young recruits headed to Afghanistan. He was 69 and still teaching field medicine to the young recruits. Maybe that was part of what kept them young, having the shame to know it all out of kids less than half his age. The other part was staying in shape. He was solidly built, more muscle than fat, but at first glance you'd never know that he was a career military. He looked like a fugitive from a Fellini movie. His thick head of shoe-polished black movie star hair, framing a tan, creased, bearded face and wise but playful eyes. He kept his lanky 6'4" frame in shape, with a brisk morning flurry of push-ups, jumping jacks, and crunches every other day. Nothing high impact, just enough to get his heart rate up and help keep his cholesterol down. He dressed younger, too. Casual, mostly turtlenecks and corduroys. And he dyed his white hair black, his one concession to vanity. If he squinted, he could still find and sometimes talk to the 20-year-old who always wanted to be where he ended up. That sense of accomplishment was the real reward, though sometimes there was unexpected blowback. Tony had once told him the story of Beth Middleton and how he was attracted to her the instant he saw her. The woman's smile hooked him, and her tight jeans held him. Her quick wit did its job, too. In that sense, he was not unlike most men. It was lust at first sight. Beth was 30 years younger than him, but something about her was much older. When they finally got around to talking about something other than medicine, he learned that she had grown up in a military family, moving from base to base, though she had managed to stick around the Florida Panhandle in Panama City long enough to go to high school. Maturity is something he found in a lot of Army brats, because they never really got to put down roots, because they rarely got to make friends for very long. Their lives were spent on the outside, reading when they were alone, watching when they were with people. Beth's father had been a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. He flew 100 combat missions in Nam in the F-4, a classy long-range Mack Buster that was still being used in the Gulf War. The Skyjacks always said if you had to be away from home and honey, this was the baby you wanted to be with. Lieutenant Colonel Middleton apparently felt the same. He later became a flight instructor, keeping close to the Phantoms, married late and had Beth even later. She worshipped her father and craved his attention, which he obviously didn't bestow as readily or happily as he did lectures on the range of his big silver bird. Beth didn't have to say it for Tony to figure out that he was the reason she was attracted to older men. He didn't imagine he was the first. After college, she earned a master's in Arabic language studies from Texas A&M and after hours snagged a PhD in MDS, Marquis de Sade. She liked to be dominated and humiliated, something Tony didn't know till later. I will pause here because it's a family show, on the Savage Nation, reading from not a La Vitra ad, but from Abuse of Power.
Savage.
Has cropped up all over the country.
The Jews control Wall Street.
This is healthy.
No revolution.
They are touching a nerve.
God bless them for their spontaneity. It's an independent.
Bourgeoisie won't go without violent means.
What we're seeing on the streets of New York is an expression of democracy.
Wall Street Jews.
We understand their frustration.
No, my friend.
We applaud their activism.
No revolution.
This is freedom. This is America. This is something we ought to celebrate.
These are the Jews. The Jews control Wall Street.
It's young. It's spontaneous. It's focused. And it's going to be effective.
No socialism.
Yeah.
Well, I rest my case, ladies and gentlemen. The Democrats have now sided with the street communists. And strangely enough, or shall I say not so strangely enough, Iran's Hitler, Ahmadinejad, agrees with Nancy Pelosi, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and the other demon cats who are lauding the communists in the gutter. Now, I want to talk about the gangsters in the Democrat Party, because you may think that it's a party of the people. You may think they care about alternative energy. You may think that they care about pollution. You may think all of those things because you're one of the useful idiots that has permitted this scoundrel to invade the White House and his minions to sack the Treasury. The fact of the matter is, we learned today that the funder of Solyndra, Mr. Kaiser, a billionaire, paid zero taxes for years. Buffett, the Oracle of Omaha, who I told you months ago was playing a pretty good act of Mr. Aw Shucks, middle of the road, middle American, let's pay more taxes. He may owe $1 billion in back taxes himself. That's Obama's favorite billionaire. He's the house billionaire. He's the house billionaire. He's the plantation billionaire, Buffett. That's why he said we should pay more taxes, because he pays so little. And the fact of the matter is, there's more to this than meets the eye. Now, I want to ask you a question on the Savage Nation. The scandals in the administration are so great, and they grow at such an exponential rate every day. I may be exhausting you with them, and I want to ask you this. Do you want me to talk about the scandals of Obama? Do you want me to read from my novel? Do you want me to do something lighter? Because I realize you can only take so much. I have never seen anything like this. One day after another, one scandal after another, he's overwhelming America. Here you have people on Wall Street saying they're Hitler's bankers on Wall Street. I have the picture. Blame the Jews. That's the message of some Wall Street protesters. I warned you behind it all was anti-Semitism. And strangely enough, or shall I say not so strangely enough, not so strangely enough, take a guess who is behind the Wall Street protests. Take a guess. That's right. One name keeps coming up, George Soros, one of the world's most wealthiest Americans. He's 81 years old. He has a fortune of $22 billion. But what does he have to do with the Wall Street protests? Well, let's go back a bit. The Hungarian-American Soros was an early supporter of the campaign of Barack Obama. Remember, he hated Bush so much because Bush wanted to tax him. Now, he has done very well indeed. His wealth has soared under Obama. But do you know that Reuters found an indirect financial link between old Soros and a group called Adbuster, an anti-capitalist group in Canada, which started the Wall Street protests with a marketing campaign aimed at sparking an Arab Spring-type uprising in America. Moreover, Soros and the so-called protesters share some ideological ground. What does he mean by that? What does Soros mean when he says, I can understand their sentiment? Why would you think one of the wealthiest hedge fund operators in the world, a man who almost broke the Bank of England, a man who almost broke the Malaysian currency, a man who gives hundreds of millions of dollars to the most socialist communist causes in the world, why would he do that? Can you figure this out? Why would he back a socialist group from Canada which wants to occupy Wall Street, copying the Arab Spring protests, which have brought Sharia law, the Muslim Brotherhood, to the forefront? But I will remind you of something that Barry Goldwater stated, which, by the way, I dedicated my book, Abuse of Power, with this phrase. The phrase is something I've never forgotten from the day I first heard it, which is, I've got to find it because I don't want to mangle it. I kind of know what it is. I just don't want to miss one single syllable. Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. Moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue. Barry Goldwater, 1964. Play Barry Goldwater.
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
Now, the election was stolen from him by the gangsters in the Republican Party, as you well know, or else we would have had an amazing presidency. But instead, it's history. He was forgotten, you know, by now. But the fact is, am I too extreme? I mean, do you want me to stop talking about this? I can do that. Maybe you don't want to know why Warren Buffett may owe $1 billion in back taxes. Maybe you don't want to know how the funder of the solar company that's being investigated by the FBI paid zero taxes for years, even though he's a billionaire. Maybe you don't want to know that the solar energy lobby is still calling for extending Obama's stimulus grants for solar power because they stand to make billions of dollars. Maybe you don't want to know who's behind the Wall Street protests and all roads lead to George Soros. Maybe you don't want to know any of that. Or would you rather that I read sex scenes from Abuse of Power? Now, the reason I say that is simple. I thought about that in bed last night, strangely enough. And I realized when I was a young kid, I would, you know, watch a lot of TV, go to movies, average American kid. And I read novels. I read pulp fiction. I remember that I would hear about books in high school, and the first thing the other boys would whisper to me about in the halls were the sex scenes. They would say, oh, you got to go to page 52 and read that. And naturally, being an American boy, I'd go to page 52 and read that. If the sex scene was good, I would buy the book or I'd borrow it and read it. Has anything really changed in this country? Why should we hide a sex scene from Abuse of Power? Why? Because I'm a conservative? You mean conservatives are made of wood? You mean conservatives are made of stone? There's not one F word in the whole book. I am not a rapper. I am not a literate moron with gold teeth and a chain hanging down to my crotch. I can write a sex scene without reverting to the gutter. And I did so in Abuse of Power. So I can do it. I can do it all. I mean, I'm a virtuoso here. Now, most people don't understand why billionaires like George Soros are socialists, or worse yet, why they call for worldwide government, a single government for the world. Most people cannot understand how the very rich would want this. What you don't realize is that the oligarchs of Russia originated this way. Let's not forget this. Soros funds liberal causes or socialist or radical causes such as Occupy Wall Street, while he made more money than anybody else on Wall Street under Obama, so far as I know. He funded the street rabble on Wall Street and across America specifically to make certain that they continue to deflect attention away from him and from his cronies and throw the attention and the spotlight upon others to try to bring them down, to keep the street rats off his own back. In the ex-Soviet Union, when Yeltsin was in power and they were moving towards a semi-market economy, almost all the assets of the Soviet Union or the state or the nation were given away to oligarchs. Some were math professors who later became zillionaires. They received the gold interests, the oil interests, the aluminum interests. Whatever heavy industries the Soviet state had been running were given to these oligarchs. And there was an understanding that the new oligarchs of Russia could make all the money they wanted to, so long as they kicked back a portion of it to the leadership of Russia, the ruling elite, and they did not get into politics. Do you remember what happened to Russian oil magnate Mikhail Khodorkovsky when he became a critic of Putin? Khodorkovsky was a math professor who became an oligarch billionaire, and he was doing fine. And then he made a mistake. He started to criticize Putin. He started to say he wanted to run for the leadership of Russia. He was then jailed by Putin and is still in prison because he violated the agreement. The agreement was make all the money you want, kick back as much as we demand, but stay out of politics. He did the first two, but he didn't do the third. He is still in prison, so far as I know. It is the same in America under Obama. Obama is the American equivalent of Putin, without the integrity of nationalism, without the machismo of Putin, but with the same mentality of Putin. We have a new United Soviet States of America. It is positively frightening to watch. I'll be right back. Let me read you something I really enjoyed writing, because I don't want to talk about the protesters for another few. I can't take it anymore. I think that these hippie trust fund brats will be going home shortly, and mommy can give them a nice hot meal, and then, you know, they can go on to the next protest that they're told to go to by the unions that they don't work for. At least the union thugs get paid for it. These idiots don't even get paid for it. All right, let me take a call, a political call. Portland, Oregon. Jay, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Doctor. Appreciate it very much. I got to give you a dual props. You were one of the first to talk about sneaking Iranian forces or stealth types in Mexico, and you'd been warning about that, and sure enough, there's stories on that.
Oh, you mean the Iranians who are shaving off their beards and looking like Mexicans, changing their names with fake IDs to come across the border? They don't even need IDs. With help from Eric Holder, they're ushered in with the help of the Border Patrol.
Well, my other comment, too, along those lines, is with those weapons supposedly from Eric Holder's approval that went down to supposedly fight off the cartel. And I'm wondering, how much longer do you think Eric Holder can stay in office at this point?
Oh, at least through several more administrations of Obama. I think Obama will be president for life, and Holder will be a very old man before they get him out of office, because since he is so corrupt, he's immune to any rule of law. See, you're asking a question that has a dual meaning to it. If we were living in a nation that was run by law-abiding citizens and a law-abiding administration, there's no question Holder would be indicted for what he's done with Fast and Furious, along with many other scandals, incidentally. But the fact of the matter is, these people are above the law, therefore the law cannot touch them. Does that answer your question?
It answers my question, and it just...
No, I'm trying to be sturdy about it. It's not easy. I'll send you a free copy of Abuse of Power. Read it before it's banned in Portland. Shall I read you from Abuse of Power? Yes, page 275, Dog Show. So he goes to the Dog Show. Jack had been to the Cow Palace many times in his life. A large indoor arena, the palace had been lost over the years to the San Francisco Warriors, host over the years, the San Jose Sharks, numerous rock concerts, wrestling events, two Republican national conventions, and a number of livestock exhibitions, including the Horse and Stock Show and the Grand National Rodeo. I'm talking about the Cow Palace in San Francisco. And he remembers going there when he was a child to a watch and clock exhibition, right? So he's now going to a dog show, and he is looking for the senator. And I actually went to this dog show last year while I was writing it, and this comes directly from my visit, okay? When they entered, Jack and Sarah were guided by an usher toward a section of the arena floor. On the floor itself, men in blazers and women in conservative suits led dogs on leashes around a cordoned-off area as the judges carefully eyeballed them and the audience applauded. This was an all-breed conformation show, and there were a variety of purebreds in competition, including poodles, Irish wolfhounds, Boykin Spaniels, German wire-haired pointers, Great Danes, Mastiffs, Rottweilers. From large to small, fluffy to nearly hairless, all magnificent in their own way, the best of the best on display. An Irish wolfhound caught Jack's attention, a breed he had always admired for its beauty and fearlessness. They were known to hunt wolves in packs. There were also Turkish sheepdogs. Their gigantic spiked iron anti-wolf collars displayed beside them as they got to their feet. These Anatolian shepherd dogs hid among the sheep, giving an attacking wolf a huge surprise when they bit into their iron collars. Jack had long been a dog lover, and seeing a gray poodle parade proudly across the floor made him instantly miss Eddie. But he knew the little guy was in good hands with Tony, and he'd be home soon enough to greet him. I'll pause right now. I'm reading from the greatest novel of its time. I would call it a political novel, but it's really a thriller, Abuse of Power. Because I could see how good this is as I read it now. It's actually so good that I'm enjoying reading it. And I got to tell you, this thing about the dog show is very good. I was there last January. I love the dog show. I had to leave early because the smell got to me. I couldn't take it.
Savage.
And welcome back to the Savage Nation, broadcasting from the East Coast. I should call it the, well, whatever coast, because I'm having nothing but technical difficulties. I had a wonderful show thus far. The problem is, it's really not a problem because you can hear me, but I can't hear you, so I'm not taking any callers for the rest of the segment. And that's a loss because I have the best callers in the radio business. Instead, I'm going to read you some of the latest news. Here's one that should break your heart. Congress lifts horse slaughter ban. You're not going to believe this, but the Thanksgiving holiday saw Congress lifting a five-year-old ban on domestic horse slaughter. The reason cited for ending the horse slaughter ban? Well, members of Congress who decided to end the prohibition on domestic horse slaughtering relied heavily on research provided in June by the GAO. Well, I don't want to look into this. All you got to know is that they're killing horses again. They are killing horses again, and it was done under Obama's watch. Obama legalizes horse slaughter for human consumption. Horse slaughter plants are legal again in the United States of America. Restrictions on horse meat processing for human consumption have been lifted by Obama over Thanksgiving. In a bipartisan effort, the House of Representatives and the United States Senate approved the Conference Committee report on Spending Bill H.R. 2012, which, among other things, funds the U.S. Department of Agriculture. While you were celebrating Thanksgiving, President Barack Hussein Obama signed a law allowing Americans to kill and eat horses. Essentially, one turkey was pardoned in the presence of worldwide media, while in the shadows, buried under pages of fiscal regulation, lobbyists snuck in a clause permitting millions of horses to be sentenced to death. Horse slaughter has been prohibited in the U.S. as funding for inspections of horses in transit and at slaughterhouses was non-existent. And this worked out well because the horse meat cannot be sold for human consumption without such inspections. However, they put it back in. It is now legal to slaughter horses for you and anyone else to eat. Notwithstanding that 70% of Americans oppose horse slaughter, that President Obama made a campaign promise to permanently ban horse slaughter and exports of horses for human consumption. You may not know this, but horses can be sent to Mexico and Canada. The fact of the matter is there's documentation of animal cruelty, slaughterhouse stench, fluid runoff, and negative community impact. It's a heartbreak. Wyoming State Representative Stu Wallace and her pro-slaughter group now estimate that between 120,000 and 200,000 horses will now be killed for human consumption per year, and that Oregon, Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, Nebraska, North Dakota, Georgia, and Missouri are considering opening horse slaughter plants. During these trying times, isn't it comforting to know that the only thing the criminals call Democrats and the criminals call Republicans can agree on is that Americans need to kill horses. It's quite a statement about the government that we have elected. Obama legalizes horse slaughter for human consumption. You heard it first tonight on the Savage Nation. It's quite heartbreaking for those of you who love animals, as I do. You say, well, what's the difference between a horse and a cow? Well, in theory, there's no difference between a horse, a cow, a flea, and a human. But as you well know, there's a difference between a horse, a flea, a cow, and a human. That's if you're civilized and you understand there's a difference between a dog, a horse, a flea, and a human. What's on michaelsavage.com? Well, let's go to the website together. Let's go to the website together and see what I have put up there. On the top right, Times reporter who ignored ClimateGate implicated in emails. What does that mean? Well, what it means is ClimateGate is a scam put forward by Al Corleone and the criminals in the warmest regime. And that anybody in the warmest regime should be arrested and their assets seized. Warmism is the religion of socialism. Warmism is an attempt to socialize the last vestiges of freedom in this country. It is a complete and total sham. This whole myth of us creating carbon dioxide is a complete lie. Thousands of reputable scientists have debunked global warming. It's a scam to make certain that firms like Solyndra get hundreds of millions, if not billions, of dollars.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content,
psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Bonnie Frank, Bonnie Frank, the 16-time the socialist congressman from Bonnie Frank, announced that he will not seek a 17th term, claiming it's all about redistricting. Well, what really led to Bonnie Frank's retirement? Do you think it was really to do with redistricting? Now, before we go into that, let me ask you, why do you think Bonnie Frank is really retiring? Do you think he's retiring to avoid prosecution for his Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac handouts? Or what do you think Bonnie's running from? Moreover, what will Bonnie Frank do in his retirement? That's a legitimate question. A man like this can never stop. Might he be a clown for children's parties? Assistant basketball coach at Syracuse University? The head of the athletic department at Penn State? A bench warmer at More Soviet Nonsense by Chicks? Or perhaps a historical consultant to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. We'll have to tune in and find out here on The Savage Nation. All we know is that Frank used Fannie and Freddie to grease the skids of the Democrat Party for so long that these huge, big bonuses that he paid to executives of the bailout-sucking Fannie Mae was almost indictable. And I remember that Bonnie Frank was literally sleeping with a top Fannie Mae executive while he sat on the House Banking Committee. Frank lied repeatedly to protect the Fannie Mae racket from oversight. And the resulting cost to you, the American taxpayer, cannot even be calculated. And yet the fact is, something is wrong with this picture. Bonnie Frank is the poster boy for term limits. The poster boy for term limits. Frank is also the paragon of death spiral Democrat politics, grabbing for new piles of taxpayer dollars on his way out the door. Bonnie Frank is the perfect skeletal boatman to ferry us across the river of fiscal death until we reach the rapidly approaching waterfall, the rapids of utter collapse, at which point frightened Americans will notice the skeletal boatman comfortably retired upon a pile of riches built through political connections waving at them from ashore. That's the story of Bonnie Frank, a disgrace. If we lived in a real democracy, the man would have been indicted a long time ago and investigated. Secret loans to banks were revealed today as he retires. There's unlimited scandals here. Now Gingrich attacks Mitt Romney. This is, by the way, a kabuki dance. He is attacking Mitt Romney in order to destroy Mitt Romney, in order to do the bidding of Bill Clinton and the Democrat Party. There's too cozy. Which coziness between Gingrich and Clinton for my analysis? And for him to be ripping at Mitt Romney, who is far more electable than this retreaded old fat white man, is unbelievable to me. He is not more electable than anybody else. He is the least electable of all the Republicans. You heard me? Bonnie Frank and Newt Gingrich are almost one and the same. I don't say he's perfect, and I don't say I'm perfect. I'm talking about pragmatism. And I'm telling you that Newt Gingrich cannot be elected. Not only does he have baggage on his baggage, not only does he have moral and ethical lapses that will come to haunt him, but he is simply unattractive. And if you think a fat old white man running against a handsome young black man is a viable alternative, you're crazy. It's shocking. Just shocking. What else is in the news on michaelsavage.com? A city is auditing a Tea Party after complaints about preferential treatment for Occupy encampment. That's right. They're using the IRS to go after the local state IRS.
I've spent the last 3 weeks building this library into a place where people can come together, where they can share ideas, where they can meet each other, and where they can just be in peace together. And now it's all being torn apart for no good reason. We're not hurting anybody here. We're not hurting anyone. We just want to be here and meet each other and learn together. We just want to try and build a new world.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. They're attacking Kane now, saying he had a 13-year affair. That's the next. Woman says she and Kane had 13-year affair. Kane denies accusation. An Atlanta businesswoman accused GOP President and hopeful Herman Kane of having had an affair with her that lasted 13 years. She said, I was aware that he was married, and I was also aware that I was involved in a very inappropriate situation relationship. The woman was not identified. So it's in other words, it's another Jacques with no one going forward. This is unbelievable. This is beyond belief. They're trying to destroy him because he's the most viable of all candidates. But that's the world that we live in. Is he the most brilliant man? No. Is he the best man? Maybe. Is he a good man? Yes. They destroyed a good man, but that's what happens when you get into this dirty world of politics. What else is on michaelsavage.com? Well, first of all, you'll have to go there to see, as I will with you right now on. So let's go to the lead story. Black Friday record, $52 billion spent. Who said it was bad? Now, it's still up on my website, but it's a big story. Did you notice that the Drudge Report stated that it was down? Well, we found that it was up. Nothing wrong with the Drudge Report. You just got to understand that no single website is the Holy Grail, right? Syracuse U fires coach amid child sex abuse allegations. Why is Freddie's Fanny running away from running? Romney in 2006 backed immigration stance he now calls amnesty. The paragon of virtue, Maxine Waters, is in line to take over from Bonnie Frank on the Financial Services Committee. This is amazing. Obama building a bunker under the White House lawn. Officials claim a mysterious excavation is for utility upgrades. Okay. Arab Spring, really, thank you, Jimmy Carter and Obama. Another victim, Islamist is the biggest party in Morocco. 9 tons of marijuana caught being smuggled into the United States. What else is on michaelsavage.com? Waving goodbye to California. More are moving out of the state than moving in. Also, Aussies are running from beer. Military probes Memorial Cross at Camp Pendleton. 1-800-449-8255. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
In solidarity for the person that they said was from the Washington, D.C. Occupy, that maybe why did he feel he to shoot the White House window today? So I think we should hold a moment in solidarity for the White House and for the guy that shot at the White House today.
Actually, that's the brain of Occupy. They just wanted solidarity for the man who was arrested for an attempted assassination on the President of the United States. But if you actually heard the lilting voice that rises as he spoke, you understand the mind of the occupiers. They don't understand anything. and they have to go home for their tuna sandwich and their meds before going back for the Brooklyn Bridge thing, that their mothers let them go out and could have fun in Zuccotti this morning, only if they came home by 3 for their meds and their tuna sandwich, and then they're going to go back for the Brooklyn event. Well, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, this is not a laughing matter. 1789 comes to mind. 1917 comes to mind. It was useful idiots like this that brought about the collapse of other civilizations and societies. And I am telling you as I sit here, what George Soros and the Tides Foundation, along with Barack Obama and the unions and Bill Ayers, have unleashed upon America is not to be underestimated. After the radio show in San Francisco, I went back out into the streets. Once again, the commuters were blocked from going home in the downtown of San Francisco as the vermin had come back, only 200-300 of the most violent, and broke into the Bank of America building, smashed the lobby of the building. And I stood outside talking to some of the SFPD, and they told me that business owners had told them that some of these rats were taking the paving stones from planters from their businesses and slipping them into backpacks to throw at the police. You haven't any idea what the police are putting up with. I have never seen such constraint, and I've never seen such a professional police force as I have today. And I mean all of the police across America facing these rats who have constrained themselves are to be commended. This is the most amazing constraint I have ever seen. And that is because they're better trained than ever before. They are trained in crowd control better than ever before. And they have been trained to deal with the communists in a way they've never been trained before. I see one scene after another of a loudmouthed girl sticking her finger in a cop's face screaming at him, with some rat with a camera running next to her, hoping to God the police do something. And yet the police don't do anything. It's affecting me on a subconscious level because I believe communism is the worst scourge of the last several hundred years, the worst scourge to have ever hit the planet. And what you're witnessing, make no mistake about it, what you are witnessing is a communist revolution that could get out of control. I had a dream last night after being around the protesters, the street rats, those with bandanas on their face, organized by Obama and Soros and the unions. And I had a dream after being in the city for my radio show with my dog, Teddy. I had a dream that the protesters kidnapped my little dog, Teddy, and sent me a note saying, you're never going to see him again. He is going to be killed. This is exactly what they're going to kill. The last bit of innocence and decency in the United States of America. Make no mistake about it. These are not nice kids. Go down there and take a look at them and listen to them. This is the face of evil. This is the rabble that has destroyed nations before. And this was organized by the community organizer in chief. In the rest of this dream, I saw a character who was clearly Harry Truman. And Harry Truman was walking somewhere in my dream, but it was in current time. And I said to him, God, you represent common sense, Mr. Truman. And he tips his hat, and I say to him, if anyone had any common sense, they wouldn't run for the presidency today. There would be a talk show host. At which point, a Rush Limbaugh-type character walks by in my dream, smile knowingly, but he doesn't give me credit for saying it, and he walks on as though he thought of it himself. All of this in my dreams, I have to just tell you, I'm not going to apologize for my dreams. My subconscious has nothing to do with me or anything to do with radio. It is what it is. Now we wake up and what's going on politically. What's going on politically is the Democrats, who are clearly behind all of this, are trying at the same time to distance themselves from it. If anyone owns this movement, it's Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and the entire Democrat leadership. But they're pretending that they're not in favor of it. At the same time this is going on, Congress was trying to pass a balanced budget amendment. I was shocked as I was eating my lunch to see none other than Nancy, $900 million to a brother-in-law, Pelosi, get up there and have the nerve to say that for the sake of the children, we must continue to spend, that she opposes the balanced budget amendment for the sake of the children. I don't know if she meant her children, but you have to listen to this to believe this. Listen to Nancy Pelosi arguing against a balanced budget amendment. At the same time, there are riots across America demanding that the spending madness stop. Listen to 26.
It is our duty as members of Congress, indeed we take the oath of office, to be the elected guardians of our Constitution, to protect and defend it, to do no harm to our founding documents. Yet if this proposed amendment is adopted, it will have far-reaching and adverse consequences.
Can you believe what she said? Did you hear this? She said it would have adverse effects to balance the budget. It's astounding to listen to this. New York WOR, Daniel, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Michael, at the beginning of your show, you asked why people listen to you. Well, I tell you, I've listened to talk radio for years, and I've listened to you for years. You're the only place I can go where you're balanced, you're multifaceted. You give us the truth, and right now, America is in bad, bad shape. And I get inspiration from you. You talk about food. You talk about little Teddy. You're very human. You're ordinary. But then you're extraordinary. You're a man beyond your years. And I just wish and
beautiful. You're like a relative. You're like a relative I wish I had.
I mean, it's just incredible what you do. You inspire me. I work 14, 15-hour days. You pick me up at the end of the day, and you keep me going. You inspire me. I start writing my own stuff at night on how I can be a better
really?
Person.
Really? That's interesting. Let me ask you something. I did a diversion in the last segment about these old stories of mine that I found and I read from one of them. Did you find that distracting, or did you find it was a good part of the show?
Oh, I find... It was refreshing. I still think about when you wrote about dead man's pants, because as a kid, I lived through that. I wore dead
man's pants. Interesting. You know, I told my agent I want to publish all of my unpublished writings in one or two volumes or one big volume, and he said, why? I said, because it will distinguish me from all the other people in the media. None of them have this. They have what they have, okay? I don't have to knock them. But none of them have this. None of them was a writer for 25 years, and none of them have the range of my interests and my abilities. And I said, that's the only way to distinguish myself. I don't want to do just another this or another that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you're courageous on top of that, when nobody else is courageous. You don't worry about anything. You just forge ahead with your own...
Well, I am. You see, this is not true. I do worry about it. I worry greatly about the evils of people in the government and what they might do to me. I do. But there's nothing I can do about it.
Savage.
It was a fledgling academic... I think I have the longest uncompleted PhD thesis in Harvard history haunting me. And there are a lot of things I would like to do. Some people are able to write and also pursue an active life. I am easily distracted by, I started writing the statement, the blank page, but I want to be au courant, the blank screen. I will take almost any excuse not to write. And I do want to write, and I want to write about some serious issues. The district is very substantially changed. There are 325 or 326,000 new people, many of whom I've never represented, some of whom I haven't represented for 20 years, which is an eternity in our politics today in terms of the issues. If I were to run again, I would be engaged full-fledged in a campaign, which is entirely appropriate. Nobody ought to expect to get elected without a contest. But the fact that it is so new makes it harder in terms of learning about new areas, introducing myself to new people.
As we said, 16-term socialist Congressman Bonnie Frank announced he will not seek a 17th term, claiming that it's about redistricting. But what really led to Frank's resignation? Joining us right now on the Savage Nation to talk about this is John Hayward, a columnist with Human Events. John Hayward, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, Michael, it's really great to talk to you. I've been a longtime fan of your show.
Do you really think redistricting had anything to do with Frank's resignation?
Well, the Boston Globe early this morning said that sources told them that it did, and Barney Frank actually mentioned that it did during his announcement that he wouldn't run again. So he was clearly looking at a different landscape and a tough re-election fight. By his own admission, it would have been harder. He thinks he still would have won, and given his last few victories, he's probably right. But that's a pretty tough race to run when you're 71 years old and maybe looking at capping off a career anyway.
Why do you think the socialist Bonnie Frank decided to resign now? You think the scandals are about to hit him in the fanny?
Well, I think there are several reasons. I think he wasn't looking forward to another tough re-election fight. There was some risk. There was a good campaign run against him by a man named Sean Bialat last time. It wasn't a slam dunk a win as he might have wanted it to be, so there was some jeopardy there. But also, Barney Frank said that he doesn't really want to serve in a House where the Republicans won't raise taxes. He complained in his resignation today that he doesn't think it's really his House of Representatives anymore. The Democrats are likely to remain in the minority for quite some time. They have very little chance of recapturing the House in the next race, and they're probably not looking too good for the race after that. So he was looking at spending some more years kind of sitting impotently on the sidelines, and it wasn't something that he wanted to do. And I think he might have felt that this was a good moment to make his exit in a way that would carry some political weight. His resignation statement was a political speech, and he said he was leaving because the evil Republicans won't raise taxes enough to solve the deficit and all that sort of thing. It was a good chance for him to climb up on the soapbox one more time, grab the spotlight, collect his encomiums, and get out of town. And I sometimes wonder, looking at the way he exited, if he might also have wanted to write the end of his story his way, because I think it's very important to the Democrats that his story end this way. It has to be Barney Frank retiring undefeated after a long career and riding off into the sunset, because their entire mythology of the subprime crisis is based on the idea that nobody in government did anything wrong. There were no mistakes made by Barney Frank or anybody else. They have no culpability whatsoever for what happened. They're very adamant on that. And the longer Barney Frank sits there, the more likely it is that questions could be asked, and maybe he could eventually lose a re-election campaign, and that mythology could be damaged.
Do you think it had anything to do with Fannie and Freddie?
Well, I think so, especially because they're both still in deep, deep trouble. There are more bailouts coming, apparently, for both Fannie and Freddie, and his relationship with them goes back for a long time. Barney Frank actually used to be romantically involved with the head of Fannie Mae, or one of the top executives there, during a time when he had oversight powers over it, so he's intimately connected with them. And as public anger builds up over Fannie and Freddie needing another bailout, and we had a big story just last month that their top executives are getting these gigantic bonuses, even as they need another huge taxpayer bailout, I think it might have been a good idea to get out of that boat before it sank beneath the waves. It was probably wise on his part to do so.
Okay, in plain English, what damage has Barney Frank done to this country?
Well, the financial system damage is huge. I would say almost incalculable. Very few Americans understand what really happened during the subprime crash, and it was a very complicated story in the way it unfolded, but it changed everything about our financial system. Barney Frank has his name on some legislation that was passed that has altered the financial landscape even further. So there were regulations passed in the wake of that that have not really fixed the systemic problems. We still seem to be on the hook for even more and bigger bailouts in the future. Nothing has been changed or fixed in time since the subprime crisis, and if anything, that sense of government corruption, of a hybrid fusion between the government and private sector, is still there. There's still this enormous apparatus, and the Occupy people are protesting, I think, against half of it when they protest against the big banks and how much they hate the big investment houses. But there's a government side to that story that created this environment that worked with these corrupt banks, and that government side is not only still there, but they're more powerful than ever. The government is bigger than ever. It's spending more money than ever. It has more regulations than ever. Nobody on the government side suffered in the slightest for the subprime crisis in the event. Some of them have since left office. But there was no real sense that the government itself ever took responsibility for what happened, for its role in what happened. And that sets us up for more danger to come. People don't really understand what happened in 2008, so they may not understand what's going to hit them in 2012 or 2014 or any of these other times to come. We haven't fixed what caused that problem. We've only gotten mad at roughly half of the problem. We're angry at corruption, at the people who purchased corruption, without being properly focused on the people who sold it.
Barney Frank is the poster boy for term limits, but do you think there's any chance at all that we could get term limits passed in this country, term limits for Congress?
I do think so, but it won't be right away. I don't see that as being a big issue in 2012, but it might be something to come in the years after that, and I think it's important. He is a perfect example of why. He comes from a very small congressional district in Massachusetts. If you don't live in his district, you don't get to vote against him. He's been there for 16 terms, which is longer than a lot of people out there protesting in the streets on Occupy Wall Street have been alive, and there was no way to get rid of him. He had enormous power over people's lives, and unless you were one of his relatively small number number of voting constituents, you had nothing to say about it. And he got all that power because he was there forever. He wasn't a brilliant economist. By all accounts, he's an intelligent man. But he wasn't some sort of superhumanly gifted economist. He was not a successful businessman who knew what it take to make the country tick. He wasn't a big bank expert. He was just a congressman, a politician, who amassed a staggering amount of power because he sat in a safe seat for 30-odd years and became a senior member of the party. That's a dangerous thing going forward for us as the government becomes more powerful and more centralized, and more people who run it are only running it because they've been there forever. Term limits is the only answer to that I've ever seen. No other method seems to work. Even in a big turnout election like 2010, a historic midterm election, what percentage of them actually lost their seats? It was historic, but it certainly wasn't like the turnover at a big company that fails and loses its whole executive board.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I live in creepy San Francisco, depressing, creepy, hippie San Francisco, and basically I'm a reclusive personality because I have chosen to be withdrawn and reclusive. But I grew up in a different world, and now that I'm on the East Coast, I come here once in a while to South Florida. I'm leading a life that is almost a continuation of a life I left behind many decades ago, which is highly social, highly outgoing. And such. And it's an interesting duality in essence. I got to tell you something. One of the reasons I choose to be isolated in San Francisco, and you say, well, how can you live there? You're not like them. No, I'm not like Nancy Pelosi or Barbara Boxer. I don't know anybody there except one or two people that I talk to. Two, three, four guys I count as guys I know. I have no representation in Congress. You're telling me there's a congressperson in Northern California? No. You're telling me Boxer or Feinstein represents American values? No. So in South Florida, I have a totally different life. I have a congressman named Alan West, he's a hero of mine, a patriotic American war hero, who knows exactly what's going on, who knows the black experience inside and out. I didn't even get to that. I'll get to it maybe tomorrow. So anyway, we talk about all the different subtleties of that, and we didn't get into the genius stuff. I mean, that's for me. But the night before, I had gone to the Mar-a-Lago that Trump owns, and it's really an amazing. It's like the Palace of Versailles. I've never seen such an attention to detail. I got to talk about the food for a minute because I am a food person. Do you know that the food on the East Coast doesn't compare to the food on the West Coast? It's the magnitudes of betterness. I love people in San Francisco think they're foodies and they know food. They don't know food. They do not know food. It's not that it's different. The people are not as picky on the West Coast in San Francisco. L.A., yes. Yes, the L.A. people are very picky because most of them are from the East Coast of New York, and they're very demanding, and they'll send something back if it's no good. The reason the food in the Bay Area is so mediocre, by and large, is because the people are sheeple. The sheeple go in a restaurant, and they're ashamed to send anything back, even if they knew the difference, which I don't think they do. Whatever they give them, it's wonderful. They go into an Asian restaurant, they start bowing right away for a glass of water and a napkin. God forbid the guy gives them an extra glass of water, they don't know what to do. They're on their hands and knees before, thank you. They go in the Asian restaurant thanking him for even letting him eat there. The East Coast, the food's no good. They send it back. What is it you give me this garbage for? You know what I mean? Look at the shrimp. It's still moving around or whatever. So I got to tell you, the standards are higher in food quality as far as I'm concerned. So I'm having a drink, you know, the suit, the tie, which is unusual for me. And it's the appetizer drink, open bar, blah, 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 waiting for the people to come in. And I've been to all sorts of events in my life. I have never in my life been in a smorgasbord, so to speak, if you want to call it that. You have the ahi station and you're expected, right? They had a paella station. Now, I happen to love paella. And I went over there. I said, all right, I cooked it myself. I said to the young lady behind the counter. She said, well, how is it? I said, you know what? It's very good. I said, everybody makes it differently. I said, well, how's the chef make it? She said, turn around. He's right there. He came over. I said, how do you make it? I have one question for you. Do you use real saffron? He said, yes, we used about, I didn't say like 2 pounds of it tonight for this crowd. I said, well, okay, that's a good start because it tastes like it. As you know, saffron is super expensive. It's the pistol of a particular plant. And I'm not talking about guns. That might be a banned word in the new America. But he said, yes, real saffron. And I said, here's the real question. Do you cook your paella with the pan covered or do you leave it open? Because a lot of the recipes say leave it open. He said, no, I cover it or else the rice won't cook. I said, so do I. So I confirmed that I know what I'm doing because I lived in Spain when I was a youth. When I was a wayward youth trying to find my way in life, I lived in Spain for a while. Great experience at the time. Anyway, it's a long way of getting back to the topic at hand. That night they had a show, and I'm not a show guy because it reminded me, when you say dinner and a show, I can't sit that long. I'm a radio talk show host. I do a 3-hour show. Believe me, it's exhausting. So the idea of going to an event where it's 2-hour appetizer and 2-hour dinner is almost a dead man. So when the girl came out, a 10-year-old girl, I figured, it'll be just some, you know, kid who can sing and I'll clap and I'll go home. Well, she stirred me, as I say to you, this child star, and I said, God, I remember what it was like to be around. Where are the prodigies, I ask myself, like this child? Where are they? Where did they go? And the answer, of course, is built in the question. A society that emphasizes the loser, the bum, the drug addict, the rehab, pays almost no attention or spends almost no money on the genius or the prodigy, and that's why we have such a wreckage in our school system. I'm down in South Florida as opposed to San Francisco. I couldn't take the cold. Normally, I told you I love the cold. The wind got to me 5-6 weeks of the wind, so I came down here. I actually don't mind the heat and humidity because it's not bad. The storms are gorgeous. Very romantic. Remember, I lived in the tropics for years. I lived in Hawaii. I lived in Fiji. I lived in Tonga. Real deep tropics, South Pacific tropics. So I love storms. I love Zone 10, horticulture. It's astounding to see the kind of plants that grow here, which grow nowhere else in America. This is the only Zone 10 area of America. So if you're a botanist or a horticulturalist, South Florida is gorgeous. The roads are beautiful down here. You know all the roads are paved? They're not broken. Do you know when you go back to San Francisco and you come in on SFO, 19th Avenue, the main artery running from the airport into the city, looks like, well, a third world nation of 15 years ago? Have you been on a road recently in Los Angeles? Have you seen the state of the infrastructure in California? It is lower than that of many third world nations. Florida, the roads are gorgeous. How is that possible? Answer, because they have tight-fisted legislators who don't spend money on immigrants, illegal immigrants at that, who want to platinum health care systems for free and hiring every lawyer in the world. You know, there's a voice I'm about to play for you. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who is as vile as they get. She is as vile as they get. She's everything I ran away from in New York 40 years ago and worse. Every pushy, mink coat wearing woman in New York that I detested and ran away from reminds this. Listen to her, Debbie, whatever her name is.
The president is in actually remarkably good shape, given that he is still struggling to help pull our economy out of the Republican recession that he inherited. His numbers are still strong. He still has widespread support. If anyone is in trouble, it's the Republican Party. Right now, they have
a turn her off. How would you like to get behind her on a line in a deli at 10 o'clock in the morning, a deli waiting for 6 mixed bagels? Or worse yet, how would you like to have her behind you when a mob is pushing for bagels at a deli in South Florida and she pushes you out of the way? Or how would you like to get behind her, or in front of her, rather, with a supermarket cart? Or how would you like to get behind her? I wouldn't like to get behind her anywhere, frankly. I mean, you talk about wide support. Debbie Wasserman Schultz has real wide support if you actually see a full body shot. Now, there's a woman with real wide support. I am obsessed with weather. I look every day at the weather and the forecast for weather. Thank God it's going to be a cooling trend coming in on the weekend. Yeah, I know you shouldn't, you're not supposed to talk about it because it's a national show and your weather's different than mine. But I'm an organic person. It's organic, it's young, and I like to talk about what I'm thinking about. I have certain, are they quirks? What do you call, are those habits, quirks, I guess it's a disease. If I look up my horoscope every day and look up the weather every day somewhere, I guess that's a OCD. I need medication for that as well, right? Isn't that what it does? No. It used to be called an idiosyncrasy, Charles. Today it's considered an example of OCD. And a quack would have to put me on medication for looking up my horoscope every day religiously. I should say irreligiously. Since I'm on the outs with religion in the last few months, I look up my horoscope. I have nothing against religious people or religion. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I respect houses of worship. But like Jack Hatfield, my character in Abuse of Power, I'm never comfortable in those places. I don't know what it is. I'm not a joiner. I can't go into the... You know, do I make sense to you? I'm sorry, I apologize if you're a churchgoer. And I really do respect those who go and they sing, Jewish, Christian, you know, or Buddhist, the chanting thing. It would be nice to be able to get into that whole, you know, whatever it is, Latin chanting, Hebrew chanting, Buddhist chanting. It would be nice to be part of a greater, you know, whole. I'm too individualistic. I guess that's considered a crime in the socialist America today. I should be a group thinker. I'm the last of the people who, I can't join anything. I never could join it. I was a Boy Scout once for a period of time. I really enjoyed it a lot, but I've never been a member of anything ever since. I can't join a group. I can't join a club. I can't join an organization. Because right away, I mean, I can't listen to anybody. I get crazy. If I go in a restaurant, for example, I can't take people talking next to me. I don't mind talking. Okay, quiet talk, fine. I know that's a public place. I'm not like the girl who's writing in a journal in a cafe that I talk about. You know, stares at you if you dare have a conversation, or you sip too loudly from your cup while she's composing her missive there in her diary, whatever. So I understand this conversation, but why, when they get gassed up on two glasses of cheap wine, do they have to scream? You take an average hag from the Marin County area. You throw two cheap glasses of Chardonnay down her yap. And then follow it up with a tiramisu, you got to leave the restaurant. You have never heard anything like it. The volume goes up and up and up and up, and then I take the food into another, I do take home. I take the food out. I don't mean to be comedic in the political arena, but there's nothing political to talk about anymore. I think I've said everything I'm ever going to say about politics. The rest is just the details. Here, I'll give it to you in a short. One, we have the most corrupt administration in American history. The rest you don't have to know. That's all you need to know. Well, you do need to know that we have a media that's totally owned by the administration. And therefore, then nothing's